Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from the Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like this show and you also like the paranormal, then be sure to check out my other podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every single Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Demon in the Crawl Space. When it comes to investigating the paranormal, the team of Brian, Robert, and Jeff of PD Paranormal have pretty much seen it all over the last 20-some years. From a man whose home was infested with a demonic force after playing with a Ouija board, also a school that encouraged bullying and harmful behavior, then turned to an asylum that housed tortured souls for decades, and much more. Today, we hear about their drive to find answers about why the supernatural still seem to live among us.
I started back when I was probably in grade school. I mean, I'd find myself going to the library and finding books just on ghost stuff. Back then, they didn't really have a lot. You'd find books like from, I think it was Nancy Robert, Hauntings of North Carolina, different things on ghosts. And I'd read on to that, and it sparked my interest. And then, you know, like I said, when I got older, my grandfather had passed away, and I was sitting down in the living room and looking up where his chair used to be. My grandmother's dog was there staring. I don't know what it was staring at. And I looked up and seen him staring at me. And then that just got my interest started, wanting to look for answers and find out what's going on.
Interesting. When you went to the library to find those books, what was driving that? Like, where did that interest come from that made you go, I want to find ghost books?
I have no clue. I was always drawn to it. It's like I was drawn to this field for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of there. How about you other guys? We got Robert and Jeff with us also on the show today. Robert?
Well, mine started very early. My grandparents lived in a home that a lot of things happened and we couldn't never explain. And then my uncle had moved into an old farmhouse up in way out in the country. I mean, way out there. And we started having a lot of experiences there of doors opening. You shut a cabinet and turn around and pour you something to drink. When you turn around, the cabinet's back open and you try to recreate it and you couldn't. It didn't make sense. And then one night, you know, we were just sitting around watching TV and things started happening. And I was very, very young and it sparked my interest. So I started doing a little research. You know, back then there wasn't no such thing as internet or anything like that. So my research, of course, led me to the library and talking to older people and, you know, even going talking to preachers and pastors and different people like that. And next thing I know, you know, I got a flashlight and an old timey cell phone that the camera didn't even half work on. And I catch myself up in the middle of the night trying to film stuff and catch stuff.
With very grainy pixelated photos.
Yeah, <I'm> exactly. Sure.
I remember the first camera phone. Yeah, it wasn't great. So you were in this cabin and things started happening and you were very young. What was, you know, obviously you being very young, I'm assuming you weren't in the cabin by yourself. What was the reaction of your family and those around you when these things were happening?
Well, most of the time it was me and my little cousins and my uncle most of the time. But I mean, like you sitting there watching TV and my aunt had worked third shift. So the bedroom that she stayed in did not have a door. So she would take like a blanket and hang it over the door. And we'd be sitting there watching TV and all of a sudden you see this blanket just lift up like somebody walks out of it and then drop back down. But nobody would be there.
Almost like a classic, you know, like it's almost like out of a cartoon where
exactly.
the blanket and then it. So what's the reaction of yourself and those around you when this happens? Because obviously that's a pretty clear cut, you know, unless David Copperfield is visiting for the weekend, it's got to be something going on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my uncle, he was the biggest skeptic I've ever known. And he actually seen it happen and he would just look at us and smile and keep watching TV like it wasn't anything. And then, you know, one of my little cousins, she would be freaking out like, oh my God. And then me and my other little cousin, we just, we were so fascinated by it. You know, I was never scared by it. I was just fascinated. I wanted to know how, what, who, why, where, when, and that's what perked my interest.
Sure. And that, yeah, and that makes you wonder, and it's just at that point, after you had that experience, was it just kind of accepted that, look, there's ghosts, we've experienced this, you're kind of operating from that, not necessarily to prove that it exists, but was it more so, what is it, and how is this happening?
That's exactly right. And then it started getting into the point, not long after that, we lost one of our grandparents, and I'm like, well, you know, if these other spirits can be here and walk through curtains and stuff, then what do I got to do to try to contact her? And that's where it started with my ITC research and building equipment. Cause I was a kid, man. I didn't have no money. I couldn't just go out and buy equipment. So I started researching and practicing and taking ham radios and CB radios and converting them and starting ITC research on it. And I've been doing that for 27 years now.
How interesting. Jeff, how about you? Where did everything kind of start out for you? What was your interest, or where did that begin?
Well, back when I was little, used to watch on TV and used to sneak up at night because mom and them made me go to bed. And I used to watch it on TV. I was like, man, I always want to do that. And I had an opportunity to do it because me and Rob were actually cousins, and he got me into it, and I didn't believe in it as far as to I saw it. And when I went with him on an investigation, and I was like, wow, I'm hooked.
So you just kind of got into it that way. And then what about the investigation made you hooked? Was it the atmosphere? Did something happen? What occurred?
We went to St. Albans, and all the stuff at St. Albans happened, and I was like, wow.
At St. Albans, the first time he was there, he had some really good experiences. We were getting straight up sentences coming through the ITC box. It was not just words. So that kind of blew his mind. And then we actually got a couple pictures of stuff that we cannot explain. And just the feeling that was there. We had some guest investigators with us from Paraflix, Our Haunted Lives. And he actually got to see the guy going up the stairs, and they heard this big growl. I mean, it was really loud. And he seen the guy run out of the place. So yeah, he had some really good experiences for his first investigation.
Jeff, when you heard that big growl on your first investigation, did you start to have second thoughts at all? Were you kind of like, well, this is neat, but growling is usually a sign of danger.
Yeah, actually, it was like I was shocked, and then, but it made me want to go up to try to figure out what it was, you mm-hmm. know, and try to debunk it, but couldn't debunk it because it wasn't there to debunk.
Sure. No, yeah, no, exactly. Give me, whoever thinks they know the history best for the audience, you know, what is the history of St. Albans from when it was a working, you know, facility to the state it became in today?
St. Albans, it started out as a all-boys school. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, it's in Radford, Virginia. And when it was an all-boys school, they were very big on athletics. I mean, and they were really good. And it got to the point to where bullying was encouraged there to try to toughen these kids up to make their sports teams better. Mm-hmm. And it got really, really bad. The bullying got bad. I mean, to the point to where you had kids that was actually committing suicide and stuff. And they eventually turned it. They closed it. They closed the boys' school out because it got just that bad there. And after the school was shut down, it reopened in 1916 as a psychiatric infirmary. It was supposed to be an alternative to the other asylums scattered throughout the United States. And, you know, it was a little different. Like, they had a rooftop garden, a bowling alley in the bottom. They even had a small farm. But I'm going to be honest with you, man. It whenever it turned into the sanatorium, it got really, really bad then, because they started doing electroshock therapy and stuff like this. And they were really, really mean to the patients, trying to figure out how to cure, you know, like craziness and stuff. And a lot of people died in that place. A lot of people just, they went through some very traumatic experiences in there, and a lot of death in there.
How interesting. I mean, it's one of those places where, I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of negativity from the time when it was the boys' school. And
that's exactly right.
And all of that. So you already kind of got a template and a starting point that's pretty dark. And then you convert it over to this. And it almost sounds like initially there was somebody in that mix that was trying to be a positive force with the gardens and the bowling alley and things like that. But it sounds like at some point that, you know, kind of got overshadowed and it turned very dark. Do we know why it turned so dark? Was it just the means of the time, and that's just kind of the direction a lot of those places went? Or was there a force there?
I think, it was the means of the time, because they were trying their best to figure out, you know, how to help people that's having mental problems. And, you know, they were doing like the ice baths and electroshock, and they were trying to do anything they could to help. But what I don't know if they actually realized they were hurting them more than they were helping.
Yeah. It makes you wonder when you look back on this, and the techniques that were tried repeatedly everywhere. Usually when you're doing something repeatedly, it's because it produced results at some place or, you know, there's something, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. When you look back at some of these techniques, none of these things would help anyone that has a mental illness or anything of that nature. It just makes me wonder, why did these things keep getting repeated over and over, where clearly there's no productive results out of it?
That's exactly right. And then you got people that's dying. I mean, you know, it's just like the story of, I think her name was Rebecca. Ain't that her name, Brian?
Yeah, Rebecca.
You know, she was actually raped by one of the, I guess you'd call them, workers there.
Yeah.
And, you know, she lost the kid. She had it in her room. Nobody knew about it. She put it in a jar and dug out the wall and had it hid in the wall. And every night when everybody go to bed, she'd pull it out and rock it in her rocking chair. And it was a bad situation. And then they found out about it. They come in and they took the jar from her that had the baby in it. And when they took it away from her, she went crazy and she went into the bathroom and she just hung herself. And we've actually ran into her spirit there. She still remains there.
What was your experience in running into her?
Well, the first time we went there, I'll let Brian talk about that, because he had the best experience out of all of them.
Go ahead, Brian.
Tell him about what happened with you and Rebecca.
Yeah, well, the first time that we was there, it felt like something was following me around the whole time I was there. I was feeling emotional the whole time. And I really, that first time that we didn't know nothing about Rebecca, and we put it two together now, what happened to me. And I'd walk around, feel like my neck was hurting, like it was sore for some reason. And by that time, I said, I was going to go upstairs and see what was going on. Before I even went up there, I was downstairs in tears, crying my eyes. I already knew what happened before I got up there. But I didn't really know what was going on. This really never happened to me before. And to come to find out, you know, she was letting me feel how she felt at the moment, then when she hung herself, and that's why my neck was hurting so bad.
And the funny thing about it is, before we even knew the story of Rebecca, he was telling me that somebody took her child away from her and she killed herself. And then whenever we go talk to the owner of the location and they tell us this story, we're like, wow, that's amazing.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe, or visit thegravetalks.com.